previously on The Adventure Zone, Hieronymus Wigginstaff's School for Heroism and Villainy.
Argo Keen here.
Sir Fitzroy Maplecourt.
I have no name.
I'm Gary.
I'm Groundsy the Groundskeeper.
This is Hernandez, the animal handling professor. In the center of the grounds is a remarkably tall woman. On either side of her, you see a dark-skinned man in cloth armor and a dragonborn with silver scales.
My name is Rolandus Fontaine. This sorcerer is Zena. This is Rhodes the Ranger.
My name is Buckminster Eden. My sidekick, Leon. This is my friend, Rainier.
My name is Dord LeBiff.
My name is Tomas, the counselor.
Hieronymus Wigginstaff. My brother, Higglemiss Wigginstaff. You're the failed one, right?
Sir Fitzroy Maplecourt.
You're the one who's magic came and ruined everything for you. Shafts of light begin to pierce through your dorm room window. It is just barely morning, the wee hours of the morning. And Argo, you wake, not fully, just slightly wake, to the sensation of something gently brushing your mustache. Please give me a stealth check.
A stealth check?
Yes.
All right, stealth check. That's a 15... Plus 8? Would that be right?
Yes.
No, what?
Yeah, he's a rogue, my dudes.
So did I just get a 23?
You yeah. did.
That no, may be the you highest. You got a 15 plus 8. Let's not go hog wild,
that's
okay?
That's a 23.
It's not actually. It's actually a 15 plus
it's
8.
A which, dirty 23.
It's such a dirty 23.
Brennan Lee Mulligan
say. It's a nasty 23.
I
yeah.
will take a nasty, funky 23.
With your funky 23, you remain calm and you're able to just like slightly open one eye and peer at what is happening, and you see a fuzzy cat brushing against one curve of your handlebar mustache. Now, when I say fuzzy, it's not like a furry cat, though it is furry, but more like its edges are blurred. As you look at it, you're having a hard time kind of pinning it down visually. What do you do?
I think he speaks in very low tones and says... Hi there, kitty, kitty, kitty. Nice, kitty, kitty, kitty. Please don't scratch my face.
The cat turns and looks at you. It tenses slightly, but it doesn't disappear. It doesn't scratch. It just is kind of looking at you, kind of like it's still figuring out what it's about to do. What? How does Fitzroy and how do they sleep? Are they light sleepers, heavy sleepers? What are we looking at here?
I'm half-elf. Does that mean I just kind of... I think elves just go into a trance or some shit and don't have to sleep.
This
so I'm a
true.
Half. So I'm a half-elf, so I guess I just, like, go into a half-trance. I think you would walk into the room and see me and be like, oh, what's up, Sir Fitzroy? But I would be asleep. I just look extremely conscious, which is probably very upsetting. Luckily, I am two beds up. So you all don't have to witness. The bunk bed is for your protection as much as it is for mine.
So I'm going to say in your kind of light meditation sleep state, you hear Argo making, you know, talking and saying things. So like you are now aware of this situation as well. What about the Fearbulk? How does the Fearbulk sleep?
He is not sleeping. He normally sleeps very soundly. I don't feel like he's sleeping well in this environment. Like it's indoors. It's very the air is stale. It is not how he's normally like scooping up a big pile of like pine needles and leaves and stuff and having a nice sleep on that. And this is the stone and what have you is not his thing. I think he sleeps very fitfully.
then I'm going to say he is also. So you are all three now, as roommates, as individuals, aware of a situation where there is a cat in the room that is difficult to perceive, that is sitting on Argo's upper chest, that was most definitely not there when you all laid down to go to sleep or to zone out, depending on which one you are.
I want to cautiously like lean over the side of the bed and do an arcana check. Just like kind of see if I know like what my experience with magic is nearly non-existent, which is reflected by my very bad arcana score. But I right. do want to see if I can kind of discern like what's going on with it, why this thing is intangible in the way that it is. That is a nat one plus one.
You don't know shit.
Two.
You're That's like, is that a cat?
Yeah. What's up with that dog?
Friend Furbolg, friend Druid, don't you have like an affinity for animals and stuff? Could you get this cat off my chest?
Why are you frightened? It is cat.
I've never seen one before.
Yes. So, I will help.
Okay.
Is cat.
Great. So instead of like running through phylum and genus and all that stuff, could you maybe ask it nicely to not maim and deform me?
Sure. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yes. Cat.
The cat turns and looks at you.
I can see you will not be reasoned with. I am sorry. I am sorry, Argo. He will not listen.
Gary, help.
Hey, how's it going there?
Roll over and go back to sleep really stretched.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the castle cats. Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about that. They come and go as they please. Well, it wouldn't harm a fly. I mean, they would, but they wouldn't harm a student, I think would maybe be a better way to put it. They're pretty cool as long as you're pretty cool to them. And that's true of a lot of animals when you stop and think about it. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Gary. I hope that you slept well, if that's a concern of yours.
I don't sleep. I'm a magical stone kind of golem thing, I appreciate the sentiment.
Sure, doorknobs don't need to sleep either. So
I'm not a doorknob. I'm somewhere between that. Come on.
I am actually allergic to quantumly untangled animals.
Uh-huh.
Specifically cats, and so I will need this dealt with, I guess.
Okay, let me teach you a magic spell. You ready?
Oh, yeah.
Shoo.
You want me to hit him with a shoe?
No, S-H-O-O. Shoo.
Okay. Shoo.
And the cat jumps off of you. And as it jumps, just before it hits the floor, it disappears, almost like it was jumping through a hole you could not see.
I am having a dink. I think maybe it's good thing we are at this school. We cannot make a cat go away.
Yes, I was just thinking that. Not our finest hour, boys.
All right, well, now that you all are awake, there are some announcements this morning. First, if you're hungry, on your way to class is the first day. Don't be late. That's a bad first impression. But on your way to class, you can stop in to the main hall, grab some pastries, some fruit. We got plenty of coffee down there. Make sure you get a good start on the day. Breakfast is the most important meal. Also, this is just kind of a general announcement for all students. There are no secret passages at Wiggenstaff's. Please stop looking. There's been a lot of damage just in the last 24 hours to paintings and statues. Some of the tapestries have been cut up. There are no secret passages. And I know that's what I would say
If you are awesome, a secret passage,
but there,
yes.
I promise you, cross my little stone heart, there are no secret passages. And finally, another general announcement for anybody planning to head out to Hope for some supplies or, you know, just to visit the town. Be sure to stop at the bursar's office and talk to Osric to set up your line of credit through the schools so you don't have to, you know, go carrying money around or anything like that. We wouldn't want you to be a target for any kind of pickpockets or, you know, any kind of, you know, mercenaries or thieves on the road or anything like that.
Gary, help?
Yes?
Who do I speak to about setting up in-room dining?
Well, you could maybe leave that in, like, the comment box at Tomas's office. But I can't imagine that would end up being high priority.
I have a question about Gary.
Okay.
For you.
Oh.
Is the Gary a hive mind? Does each individual Gary have...
Is Gary a hive mind?
Does each individual Gary have sentience? Does this Gary that is in our room know things that the other Garys do not about us? Or is all information shared between Garys instantaneously?
All information is shared between Garys. It is a hive mind, though, with individual consciousnesses. So your Gary has its own individual personality, and as does every Gary. But they do share information betwixt one another.
This is going to be some her shit, because if Gary falls in love with me, Gary could also fall in love with everybody else, and I get jealous.
Listen, Griffin, Gary doesn't have time for love. He's career-minded, you know what I mean? He's out there. He doesn't have time to have it all.
And it might be a good, you know, rule of thumb for maybe you tone down the attractiveness if you can, you know, just to avoid all those entanglements.
Are you talking about with Gary? Because Gary can't tone it down, honey. He's got...
No. Oh, okay. No, I knew that was just fits. I thought maybe he could back off.
Tumblr's really enjoying the narrative of you and me arguing about who gets to play the attractive character this season.
So here it is, the first day of class, and you all have chosen some electives for the day. So Argo, you have opted to take the blame-taking class. On your way, well, do you stop and grab some pastries, some fruit? What kind of breakfast does Argo eat?
A lot of citrus for the scurvy. You know,
scurvy is a real concern. It's starting to border on like a phobia for Argo.
No, listen, when you live on the sea, I'm telling you, it's always there. Scurvy and beriberi. I've always heard a lot about beriberi. But I don't know.
No, Dad, it's Mary Berry. She's a judge in the early
seasons. The dreadlord Mary Berry who sails the seven seas.
She'll get you, my dude. Sink you to the soggy bottom.
I don't even know if... That was very good, Travis. I'm sorry I didn't laugh at it.
Thank you very much.
I bet norovirus is also a concern for Naval.
They don't call it that, though.
Okay.
I'm sure... I doubt very much that there were pirates sailing the sea like, "Arr, be careful of the norovirus."
Yeah, they had some. They would call it Davy Jones's
revenge.
Revenge. Can we have breakfast together?
Sure, that'd be cute.
Yeah. I want to float that.
Sounds good.
I turn to the two of you as we're walking through the quad, and I say, "Gentlemen, I apologize if I was brusque yesterday during our orientation. I found myself in an exceedingly difficult scenario, one of the worst I've faced so far in my life, and I may have made a bad first impression with the two of you, and if we are to be living together, I figure we may as well crush the beef. And so, can we start over?"
Sir, are you referring to when you were, you know, so shocked and repelled by us being your roommates that you decided you'd rather, you know, jump into a volcano or wrestle a kraken rather than you know, hang out with us? Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes, I can see how you would find that unpleasant.
Yeah.
And what about you, bud? Gosh, we need something. We're kind of dying out here.
I am fine.
Derek?
Derek. This turns to ash in my mouth.
Derek? Derek?
I shall not be Derek.
Okay, well, Fairbolg friend, can you forgive me for being so harsh?
I will.
Cool, that was much easier than I thought it was going to be.
Hmm.
What brings the two of you to this institution? Obviously, you probably picked up on my backstory of not failing so much as not completing my matriculation at Clyde Knight's Night School. What about yourselves?
I have a goal. I have a goal of being a sidekick, a very specific sidekick. I want to be a sidekick to the Commodore, the great naval hero, the Commodore. It's recently become a dream of mine to be by his side kicking.
Shoot for the stars, as I always say, inspirationally.
That's my star right there.
What about yourself, Fearbolg friend?
I am nothing, and I must serve.
Okay, I'll try to work with that. Well, here's to a good semester, I suppose.
You arrive at the Great Hall. You can see laid out, there's some various bready pastry type things. You see various fresh fruits, a coffee stand, and even some fresh squeezed juice. It's nice.
Travis, you shouldn't have.
Yeah, I did it with my mind, chefs.
Isn't that cool? You can just say, like, there's croissants.
I know, right?
There is.
Oh, shit.
Because I was thinking about it, and I was like, I could give you guys, like, some shitty gruel or whatever. But then I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll spring for better imaginary food. Spare no imaginary expense.
Is there an omelet bar?
Hell yeah, there's an omelet bar. There's three.
Yeah.
Is there a crepe master?
No.
God. Does this school have anything? Perhaps you could find some room in the budget for crepe mastery. You have a whole omelet station. Is everybody at this school eating omelets? It seems inefficient. Make them to order.
If they use batter instead of eggs,
they
could make you a crepe instead of an omelet. It'll have green onions in it and stuff.
Well, that's different strokes, you know?
There are savory crepes.
Okay. Not for me. I like it sweet.
Okay. I know it's only the second episode, but I feel like we already know so much about Fitzroy. He likes sweet crepes.
He's a failure.
He's a failure.
Well, so, like, what, we grab a tray and go through the line, or what do we do?
This is more of a, like, you know, grab a napkin, grab some fruit to go. You know, you don't want to be late for class, Argo.
Hey, Trav.
Yeah?
Did you, when you were planning this out, did you think that getting breakfast would take 20 minutes, or is this still part of your grand plan?
No, I honestly didn't, Justin. I thought it would be more of like a let's get to the game, but now I realize I painted such a rich picture with all of my fruit and pastries.
It's Chekhov's fruit, Travis. If you're telling us about the fruit, we assume it must be important.
I understand. Listen, here's what you didn't know. You're all on your way to class now. There was a key hidden in the fruit.
Damn
like
it.
Like Survivor.
Yeah.
Immunity advantage.
Ow! Oh, I bit into a lime and I got something hard and metallic.
Shit for a second. You bit into a lime?
Oh, yeah. That's the best way to stave off scurvy.
You're so tripped out by scurvy. Okay.
Here's the problem. The key doesn't actually go to anything. Chef Stuart LeBeuf just dropped it in there on accident.
I'm going to hang on to it anyway.
Okay, write down scurvy-free key for me. You've collected a scurvy-free key. All right. Argo, you're on your way to class. You arrive at blame-taking class, and you are running just a little bit late, just a couple minutes, and you're the last person to arrive. There are five other students in the class, including Leon, who you recognize, and four others who you don't. And when you enter, even though you are late, The professor turns to you and says, oh, hello. I am so sorry. My fault. I'm sorry that I'm starting class late. Please come in. Come in. And the teacher is a halfling who is preparing his notes, getting them ready. And you know his name is Riveau. R-I-V-E-A-U. Please, you must be Argo. Please come in. Have a seat. We are getting ready to begin class. All right, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, everyone is here today. This is excellent. Welcome to Blame Taking. As a sidekick or hinge person, deflecting blame from your hero and villain is one of the most important services you can offer. If your hero or villain were to cross someone important or ruin a relationship with a kingdom, it might make it difficult for them to be able to do business efficiently. So you being there to say, oh, no, it wasn't their fault, it was mine, can save the day and make you a hero. Now, blame-taking, it's not, everybody thinks it's going to be easy, but it is an art form. So today, we're going to have a little in-class experiment, a little demonstration, if you will. So just a little game mechanics here. We don't, of course, there is no blame-taking skill in Dungeons & Dragons. So I am going to homebrew it a little bit and say that you can use your deception skill, your performance skill, or persuasion skill in place of a blame-taking check. All of that will kind of depend on the scenario. You know, persuading someone that it was your fault versus deceiving someone that you did it. Like,
right.
We'll kind of play with those right as we go. All right. So here is what everyone is going to do. One by one, you're going to come up. You are going to draw a number out of this basket. And then I will call a number. And then we're all going to close our eyes. And whoever's number we called is going to come down. And they are going to steal this gold coin off my desk. Then it will be all of your jobs to convince me that you were the one who stole it. Let's see. Argo, last one in, first to draw a number. So, Dad, you're going to roll a D6 for me and don't tell me the number.
Okay. All right. I won't.
Okay.
I mean, I did, but I won't.
Okay. And one by one, everyone comes down. They draw numbers from out of the basket. And once they are done, Riveau says, all right, I'm going to say number 4. Now, don't move. Number 4, don't move yet. Everybody heads down, no peeking. And, you know, everybody tried to be as quiet as possible. And he closes his eyes. And he turns his back to the gold coin on the desk. He waits an appropriate amount of time. We'll let you all determine in your own minds how long that is. Maybe it's 30 seconds.
A second and a half.
Well, okay. Okay, now, if everybody done? All right, we're going to open our eyes. Now, one by one, everybody's going to take their turns convincing that that they were the ones who took it. First up, Leon, I believe it is. Yeah, hi. I definitely took the coin because I loved how glittery it was and I wanted it. So I went down there and I took it and I hid it in my sock for safekeeping. And later, I'm going to spend it on alcohol. So yeah, I took it. Okay, Leon, a noble effort. Very good. Okay, next, and he looks down at the roll and he says, I believe, Mimi, and the gnome, who is in the second row stands up and goes, I took it. See, here's the thing. I love gold because I'm like everyone else, right? So I snuck down there when no one was looking, and I took that gold, popped it in my back pocket. I love it. I'm going to use that gold, and I'm not giving it back. I'm sure that this is some kind of, you know, demonstration at the end of it. We're supposed to give back that gold. I'm not going to do that. This gold is mine. Do you hear me? It's mine. Oh, okay. That was very good. Next, Argo Keen. Convince me that you are the one who stole the gold.
So, should I roll something here to use one of those?
Well, here's what I'll say. Don't tell me what you're rolling, right? Because if you're doing deception, right, I don't want to know that you're lying.
Okay.
Give me your pitch first. Well, roll. Don't tell me what you roll. Then give me your pitch, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, I hate to admit this, but I took the coin because I come from pretty bad state. You know, my family, it's not rich, and it costs a lot, you know, to come here to this academy, and then my poor mom left me with nothing when I lost her, so I need that coin. I got nobody to help me. I'm in with, you know, I'm just in dire straits, and my God, when you threw that coin out there on the desk, and I mean, I don't even care if I pass the damn class. I could use that money so badly. So I snuck down there using my amazing rogue skills, and I cobbed it.
Dang, Dad, that's so good. What'd you roll?
I rolled performance, and I rolled a 15 plus 2.
That felt like a 17.
Yeah, that was right on the money.
About a 17.
For sure.
So the other three students go, and Ravo looks around the room and says, "All right, everyone, that was very good for a first time out, very, very convincing. But I have to say, I was especially convinced by Mr. Argo Keen. I have to ask, Argo, did you take the coin?"
No, I did not. Sorry.
And Leon raises his hand and says, "Actually, I took it. I took it." "Okay, you are not convincing at all, Leon, and you actually took it." "I thought I was very convincing." So class lets out. Gary says, "Hey, everybody, class is over. This class is over. Head to the next class." And the class starts to let out. And Ravo stops you, Argo, and says, "I have to say, Mr. Keen, that was very convincing."
"Well, thank you. Thank you, Professor. The truth usually is, I've found."
"Ah, I see. Yes, that was a good tactic to take."
"So can I have the coin? You know, or is that like a union violation or something?"
No, it was just an exam. I'm not the money. It's not the reward. It's just you get grades. You know, grades. Yeah. Grades are the reward. We don't pay students for doing a good job in class.
To be fair, it is the first class. I guess in Argo's case, it must be in his entire life.
Yeah. Yes, I guess we are establishing precedent here. We don't pay students.
Oh, okay. Well, can you tell me what my grade was?
Very good.
Wow. We're on some Montessori shit.
Improving.
When I asked which class the Firbolg would choose to take, Justin, could you tell me what you chose to take?
No. But if you give me 10 seconds, I bet I'll remember.
You chose to take accounting.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Yes. Yes. I will say, yes, I did choose accounting. You're right. Thank you. Yes.
Now, the class is completely full, and everybody is basically, like, vibrating with excitement. Now, Master Firbolg, are you a sit-in-the-front kind of person, sit-in-the-back, try to blend in the middle somewhere? What are we looking at here?
Probably sit towards the middle, I would guess. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So, as the fever pitch of excitement just reaches an unbearable level, the door bursts open, And a large white owl, Aarakocra, walks into the room and says, "Hello, students. Today you take the first step on the most important journey of your life, becoming a master accountant. Looking around this room, I can see in your eyes how many of you have dreamed of this day. But perhaps there is one or two among you who have scoffed at the importance of accounting." The class reacts with disbelief and murmurs. "Yes, believe it or not, there are those out there who fail to see that without accounting, the world would crumble. So let us for a moment pretend that we all feel this way. Let us all take a breath and wonder, why is accounting so important? You see, no matter what any powerful king or influential lord would like you to believe, no one has infinite riches. Whether you have one copper in your pocket or 1 million gold, all finances have limits. There used to be a time when kingdoms were constantly competing to outdo one another. Sometimes it was with lavish festivals, and sometimes with unnecessary wars. The royals never thought of the impact this had on their coffers until it was too late. These were highly unstable times. Kingdoms rose and fell in the spans of decades. Workers went unpaid, and whole villages would starve. Then began the golden age of accounting. Kingdoms, guided by teams of accountants, began to think in terms of cost and benefit. Rather than hurling money around, they spent strategically and invested wisely. Wages were paid on time. Funds were set aside to cover those who found themselves unable to work, and infrastructure was maintained. This stability saved us, except there was a downside. It was incredibly boring. The kingdoms no longer competed, no longer partied, and no longer held lavish festivals. There was little entertainment to break up the monotony of life. And so, a new system was put in place, the system of heroes and villains. This system created exciting stories and spectacular battles while still keeping an eye on the bottom line. The heroes and villains became celebrities, and kingdoms boomed thanks to the tourism and merch sales. But if accounting teaches us anything, it's that everything comes at a price. Woe be unto any hero or villain whose costs outweigh the revenue they generate for the kingdom. They will find themselves out of work. That is why it is important that all of you, hero, villain, sidekick, and henchperson alike, keep a love for accounting ever burning in your heart and a watchful eye on your bottom line. And the whole room bursts into applause. Cheers, they're on their feet. They're absolutely losing it.
Scholastic Films presents the Golden Age of Accounting.
The Golden Age, a city on the grove. Now, looking around this room, I see amongst us many non-knowing smiles. Clearly, you are all well on your way to becoming expert accountants. Let's go around the room. We'll ask some questions and see what everyone already knows. I'll pick at random. There, Master Fearbulk, tell me what you already know of accounting.
Nothing.
Oh. Nothing?
Where I come from, one does not own all own. Why would one have more than the others?
Sweet bird in heaven. where to even begin?
for a system of trade, so that one might exchange one's goods and services for someone else's goods and services, to strengthen relations between communities as they share, and by share I mean sell, what they have to someone else, for many reasons. I don't even know how to begin to answer this question. Surely you must own something. The clothes you're wearing, you own. Those are yours, yes?
Not if you want them.
I do not. I don't know if you're asking rhetorically, but just to establish, I do not want your clothes.
It is well.
Okay. Well, the Firbolg brings up, kind of in a roundabout way, I suppose, the idea of ownership. And that brings us to the first part of the accounting equation. Assets. Now, Master Fearbook, surely you must know what an asset is.
This is a thing that is helping is good.
Okay.
A thing you have that is helping is good.
Yes, okay. A thing that you have that is helping, that is good. Yes, or to put it another way, property owned by a business that can be used to operate and generate profit, I believe is what you meant.
Is this required?
Is it required for operating a business?
This class.
Oh. yes, very much so.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? Here's an easy one. All right? This is... You don't
Maybe
need to know...
someone else.
No, you have become my opus, Mr. Fearbog. By the time you leave here in 5 years... I think you will be a master accountant, or my name isn't Bartholomew. Now, if a kingdom owns a piece of real estate worth 25,000 gold, and they owe 18,000 gold on a loan for that real estate, what is the kingdom's equity in that property?
This is a splitting. Here, all are feeling this, yes? Is a splitting. And he's grabbing his head as though he's trying to keep both halves of his brain together.
You can do this, Master Fuel. 25,000 and they owe 18,000.
This is why are there 25,000 of anything?
Because the property is worth 25,000.
What is 25,000?
Okay, how about 25? It's 25 gold, and they owe 18 gold, so what's their equity in it?
What is this? What is this equity?
It's their interest in property after all debts have been repaid.
There is a sound of a clanging! This... Surely... You hear this, yes.
Okay.
There is a fire. There is a fire behind the eyes. A splitting, splitting, splitting. It's a fire.
Okay. I'm going to put it another way.
This is required.
Yes. And you know what? I believe in you. You've got this. It's worth 25.
What is 25?
Doesn't matter. It's worth 25.
Acorn.
Sure. It's worth 25 acorns. They still owe 18 acorns.
Why?
Because they're buying it from a squirrel.
The squirrel has money.
No, it's acorns. This is your setup.
Why would the squirrel ever give away the acorn?
No, no, no. You're giving the acorn to the squirrel.
What do I get?
His tree.
We can share the tree.
No. It's
very big.
You can't. The squirrel doesn't want to share the tree.
Roam for a boat.
But, okay, in this scenario, the squirrel does not want to share the tree, you see.
A small tree? I find another is fine.
No, it's the only tree for miles. So, 25 acorns.
I have this?
No, that's how much it's worth to the squirrel. And you still owe 18 acorns. So you've already paid 7 acorns. So how much do you have of the tree?
He may stay in the tree with me.
He doesn't want to.
Upstairs.
Nope. He said it's all or nothing. He's going to take the 25 acorns you give him and trade that to another squirrel for an even better tree.
I do the joke. Trees do not have stairs.
Okay. You've given me a lot to think about, Master Fearbold.
Friend Owl.
Yes.
Friend Owl.
Yes.
When do I get the acorns?
No, they are acorns of the mind.
The splitting has returned. It is a tearing divided mind to make acorn.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. It's been a great first class. I need to do some restructuring on my syllabus for the coming weeks.
What is syllabus?
We're going to call this one early. Please learn about accounting, at least a basic knowledge, before tomorrow's class. Hey, everybody, just real quick. We got a quick announcement, and this is a guest announcement from your friends and mine, Jimson and Crushman. And you hear Jimson's voice. Gary just kind of opens his mouth, and you hear the voice come through. Hello. Just a quick announcement here. After lunch, the following students need to report to the battlegrounds. Rainier, Zaina, Rhodes, Pip, Rolandus, Buckminster, Leon, Dip, Argo, Fitzroy, Mimi, and Master Fearbulk. We're going to practice cooperative defense. And then you hear Crushman's voice kick in and say, I believe what my husband is trying to say is, it's time for human shield training. Hi, everybody. It's me, your best friend and fun uncle, Travis McElroy. I'm so excited. This is episode 2, and everybody seemed to really enjoy episode 1, or at the very least, you were all so very nice about it, and it made me feel great. So thank you. And, you know, if you enjoyed this, we're just starting out here. We're only 2 episodes in, so please tell everyone you know. Share links to it. Share links to the trailer. Tweet about it. All that stuff. We appreciate the heck out of it. Thank you all so much. A couple names this week. Ramos is named after Anna Ramos. Pip is named after @itspipster on Twitter. Mimi is named after Mimi Chu, who did the animation on our amazing trailer, which once again is on YouTube and you can share. You all show up. It's after lunch. You show up to the battlegrounds, and you can see a line is painted down the middle, and all across that line you see numerous different, they kind of look like medicine balls, almost like volleyballs, painted red.
You see Jimson, who is the sidekick and henchperson trainer. You see Crashman, who is the hero and villain trainer. And you also, Argo and Fitzroy, you see the Goliath woman that you saw the day before. You know now that she is the shield work teacher named Ramos. Ramos is kind of off to the side. She's more observing at this point, and this is clearly Crushman and Jimson's show. And Jimson says, yes. Hi, yes, everybody, come close. Thank you all for being so prompt. This is, as Crush said, human shield training. I don't like to think of it that way. I like to think of it as cooperative defense. But that name has not caught on the way I was hoping, and so we shall call it human shielding.
I raise my hand.
Yes, Fitzroy.
Sir Fitzroy, I was wondering if I could just test out of this, because I do not know if you know where I come from. I did attend...
Yes, Clyde Knight's Night School, yes.
Yes, and I minored in shield work, so I do not think you will have anything
then
to...
Then you'll do great in this. I cannot wait to see your performance.
Okay.
And now to go over the rules, Crush. Yes, thank you. So... here are the rules. We're going to pair you up. There will be one sidekick or hench per hero or villain. Now, kicks and henches, you'll be blocking and catching. And heroes and villains, you will be throwing. So what that means in game mechanics is the heroes and villains will attack, and the henches and sidekicks, you guys, will defend. And they're going to be contested roles. So they'll make an attack roll, and then you will use either your acrobatic skill or your athletic skill to try to block. If you can beat the thrower by 10 or more, you will catch it. And I'll tell you what that means in a second. If you beat the thrower by 5 to 9, you block. If you beat the thrower by 1 to 4 or tie, you block, but it's a body blow, meaning you catch it in the gut, and you're going to have disadvantage on your next check. And if you lose to the thrower, it hits the hero or villain behind you, and they are out. Now, on a catch, your hero or villain immediately gets a free throw at the other side.
Cool.
So you can use your powers and abilities in this game, except for direct attacks. So get creative. All right, everybody line up. I'm going to pair you up. Argo, you're with Rhodes. Fitz, you are with Rainier.
Yeah, Fitz, right.
Leon, you're, of course, with Buckminster. Dip is with, of course, Pip. Mimi, you're with Zayna, and Master Fearbolg, you're with Rolandus. So Zayna, who you met the week before, is a tiefling sorcerer. You can see she's a little bit disappointed with her partner, Mimi the gnome, mostly just because of the height difference. And Zayna says, "I'm sorry, but does anybody else see the disparity here, like the height difference? I know, offense, Mimi, it's about making me a target. I just feel like we are going to do very bad at this game." And Mimi says, "Oh no, hold on, wait, let me show you." And they reach into their hat, you know, it's like a standard gnome affair, and they reach far deeper in than you would have expected, and they pull out a like 4-foot-long pair of mechanical arms. "Yeah, with this I can take care of it. Don't even worry about it."
Can I get magic robot arms too? Or,
I mean, yeah, on commission.
Okay.
I don't build things for people for free.
I'll have my people talk to your people. I wanted them for this specifically.
Oh no, sorry. I only have the one set for me. But if you can, you know, get me materials and then pay for labor, we can figure something out. And Rainier comes to you and says, "Hey, Fitz, I'm really looking forward to working with you."
Yes, Fitz. You're closer. But yes, I am looking forward to it too, as so long as no deceased rodents, spring forth from your chair and do a dance in a mockery of death. And
are you sure? He's been working on a Charleston that's pretty cute.
Pretty sure that's not what I would see it as, but yes, okay. Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Yes, I hope I do not disappoint.
Yes, and listen, one thing, and this is so important, make sure I don't get hit in the face, because that's my moneymaker. And she kind of winks and smiles.
Ideally, I wouldn't let you get hit anywhere, but we'll, yes.
No, that was a joke.
Oh, okay. I didn't, didn't hit me like
we'll
that.
We'll work on it.
Okay, yes.
Okay. And Rolandus turns to you and says, yes, Master Fearbold, this should go quite well. You're a big fellow. I'll just stay behind you.
This seems wise.
Okay. Just, if it's between you and me, just take the hit, okay?
I will do this.
Good lad. Okay, great. All right, so let's roll some initiative.
For dodgeball.
I'm going to have you roll on behalf of your heroes and villains.
I got a 14.
That's not bad.
Thanks.
I got a 5.
Okay, how did you do, J-Man?
I got a 6 plus the modifier, right?
Uh-huh.
For that. Plus 1, 7.
Okay. So, on either side of the line, lines up heroes on one side, villains on the other. So, on one side, Rolandus lines up with Master Fearbulg standing in front of him. And then you see Buckminster with Leon in front of him. And Rhodes lines up behind you, Argo, and says, "Now listen here, Argo. You and I, we're going to work together just fine, all right? You just don't get in my way." Wait,
I thought I was supposed to be
Your
way.
In this circumstance, do get in my way. And don't get in my way by getting it. You know what? Just don't. Okay. Forget I said anything. Forget it.
I don't get it anyway, so that's fine.
Perfect. Okay, great. This is going swimmingly. On the other side of the line, we see lined up, we have Zayna with Mimi and Mimi's mechanical arms. And then we see Pip. And right in front of Pip is Dip. And you realize when you see them standing together that they are half-orc twins.
Aw. Wait, is one a hero and the other one a sidekick?
Correct.
Well, that must lead to a challenging family dynamic around the dinner table.
An awkward Christmas.
And then we have Rainier and Fitzroy. So up first is Zayna. Zayna picks up the ball, and she is going to take aim at, I'm going to say the Fearbog. she rolls 5 plus 2, so 7 total.
What is the, what are we rolling? What is the skill here?
You can roll with either athletics or acrobatics.
Okay.
Come on, Furby. You can do it.
That's not bad.
20.
Dang, son.
Yeah.
16 plus 4.
All right. That means that you catch it. And everyone kind of stops for a minute. And they're like, oh, dang. So that means that your hero, Rolandus, gets an immediate attack. So Rolandus is going to throw it. He wings it right back at Zayna. Mimi is able to get the block with their mechanical arms, but it bounces off. They're not able to grab it. So then up next, we have Rainier. So Rainier grabs it. She is going to chuck it at Rhodes. Oh, so she rolls 13. Beat a 13.
Okay. So I rolled a 12 plus 8 for acrobatics.
Dang, son.
That's 20.
I forgot how acrobatic you are. So you get the block. You don't grab the ball, but the block is successful. Everyone is on their feet now. Pip grabs it, chucks it over at Rolandus. Oh, that's an 11 plus... it's a 16 total, 11 plus 5.
Hell yeah, 17 plus 4, 21.
That's a good grab.
I'm burning all these good rolls when I'm playing dodgeball, though.
All right. And now, and don't forget, you can use your special skills as well. You can also use it to assist when the other person is throwing. So up next, it is, let's see, Rolandus is up. So Rolandus winds back. Anything you want to do to help assist Fearbulg?
Yeah, I have an idea.
Try throwing from higher.
And I'm going to touch Rolandus and cast jump.
Okay.
And Rolandus's jump distance is tripled until the spell ends.
So he jumps up. I'm going to give him advantage because of that. Then he jumps straight up to get kind of a top-down angle on it.
It's going to be way harder to block. Way harder.
Yeah, thank God you gave him advantage on that. He needed that. So he's got a 23 total, and he's rolling against Dip. He's aiming for Pip. And so... Oh! Nope! You pop it right off the top. Rolandus does, rather. Right off the top of Pip's head. And just like that, Pip and Dip are out. The villains are down to two. The heroes still have three. And up next is Rhodes. So that means that's you, Argo. Anything you want to do to assist Rhodes on the throw?
All right, yes. Standing there, he raises his two hands like in our reality, a football referee would do for a touchdown to serve as like a sight.
Like iron sights?
To be a sight.
Okay.
For him to throw the ball.
Give me a straight up and down wisdom check. This is another I have added to this homebrew a skill check called encouragement. So this is an encouragement check, which is based off of wisdom.
Okay. That would be nat 20.
Okay. That's great. I meant to say charisma, not wisdom. Sorry. It's based off of charisma. Nat 20. Hell yeah. You do super great. I'm going to say, you know what? That nat 20 is so good that you grant advantage on this with your amazing sights. So that's a 21 total from Rhodes on this one. And she is aiming at Rainier.
Oh, not on my watch. That's an 18 plus 5, 23.
Dang. Okay, you block it. And so then next in the order is Buckminster, who is going to chuck that at Zayna again. This time... Oh, nope. Mimi goes to reach for it, and it bounces off the thumb of their left mechanical hands and pops Zayna right in the forehead.
Was Zayna a villain or a hero?
Zayna is a villain.
Okay, so this cool team I've got.
Yeah, it's all up to you, my dude. So next on the list, we're back at the top of the order. Well, it's Rainier now. So Rainier is going to throw... Anything you can do to assist?
I turn to her and I say, "Hey, I'm going to use my magic to cheat."
Okay, I'm totally in favor of this.
I wouldn't normally do. I think that's probably foul play, but we're on the villain team, and I'm feeling dastardly, so I'm going to use my magic to cheat. I know Mage Hand, so
sick.
I mean, I don't know Mage Hand. I've been working on it. On my off time, a little bit of self tutoring, and so I'm gonna do that and just sort of push the ball even faster. Just give it a spank in the air, okay? But don't tell anyone, okay? And I turn as she starts to throw, and I hold my hand out, and actually Thunder Wave comes out of me.
Oh, dang!
And I look as soon as I realize kind of what is happening, like my eyes go wide. I look absolutely horrified, and a wave of thunderous force sweeps out from me. Each creature in a 15-foot cube originating from you must make a constitution saving throw. So, let's do that.
So, is that like everyone on the hero side?
Yeah, well, it's actually originating around you, so it depends on how big this stadium is.
Okay, so all three professors, Ramos, Jimson, and Crush. They all avoid it in different ways. Ramos plants her large kite shield, and it washes over the shield. You see Jimson just, like, basically do a vertical leap and backflip over it off of Crush's shoulder. And then you just see Crush kind of brace. And as it sweeps near him, he roars, and a blast of frost shoots from his mouth and kind of counteracts the thunder wave, and it washes over him.
Anybody, by the way, who fails this takes 7 thunder damage and is pushed 10 feet away from me. And technically, on a successful save, anybody in the cube takes half as much damage and isn't pushed.
Okay. All the teachers take some damage. They're all pretty high level, though, so, like, 3 points of damage isn't all that bad for them. Let's see. Buckminster. What's the save? What's your spell modifier?
It would be charisma plus proficiency plus 8, so 12. No, I'm not a very good sorcerer.
Okay, cool. Rainier saves and takes 3 points of damage.
Sorry, Rainier.
Buck saves and takes 3 points of damage, but Rhodes does not, and is going to take 7 points of damage and is pushed 10 feet away.
Could Argo not throw himself in the path of that thunder wave and try to protect Rhodes?
Yeah, you know what? Give me a human shield roll.
That's a 12. Plus 8 acrobatics. That's a dirty, nasty, funky 20.
There we go. All right. I guess I should also find out, did the Fearbulg save?
Yeah, you need to roll.
Oh, no. I've dropped it in my pant cuff. Oh, my gosh. It's a natural 20.
Jesus. Oh.
Fearbulg, I'm going to say then, no damage.
Yes.
Just so sturdy, so braced.
Correct.
One with nature. The thunder simply passes through him as it might a cloud or a tree.
Mm. Or a cloudy tree.
Or a cloudy tree. Did Argo save?
Well, there's another 12 plus what? Constitution? 13.
That beats the 12. So Argo takes half damage and is not pushed. And you see that Rhodes is not moving quickly enough to get out of the way. And so you throw yourself in the way of the thunder blast, and you're going to take half of Rhodes' damage. So another 3 points of damage for you. But Rhodes does not take full damage and does not get pushed. And you see a look cross her face of maybe she misjudged you.
So take 3.
Rhodes will remember that.
So now you took 6 points of damage total. Everyone else except the Fearbulg took 3.
Okay.
And Crush says, all right, we're calling it.
I thought it was Mage Hand. We were cheating.
That was not Mage Hand.
No kidding. Yes.
All right. So, yes, human shielding. You all get the basics. Hey, just wanted to say, Argo, good work. That was a good save. Are you all right?
Just gotta shake it off a little bit.
Do you want to stop by, the healer and
maybe?
Yeah. Okay.
Down to 3 hit points.
Yeah. Stop by the healer. And everybody.
Well, I caught it right in the nards. Oh
you
God.
Hate to hear that.
I hate it. Oh boy.
This is the worst.
You know what? Everybody. The first round, down at the tavern is on me. Fitzroy. I think you need to go maybe talk to Festo, all right? And then maybe join us afterwards. So that means, Fitzroy, it is time for your independent studies class in magic work.
I point out, I do just want to say none of this would have happened if you had let me test out of shield work, so. I'm not placing any blame on anybody. This isn't the class for that, but
Two good jokes. Congratulations, Griffin.
So everyone else heads down to the tavern to grab a drink. And Fitzroy heads up the tower to the magic classroom to meet with his independent study teacher, Festo.
Festo is a fairy, yes?
Correct.
Featured in the trailer?
Correct.
That's how I remember Festo.
As you arrive in the classroom, at first you don't see anyone. The classroom is empty. And then a ball of light zips around the room before landing on the desk and growing to become a, you would guess, somewhere between foot and a half, 2 foot tall person with beautiful gossamer wings. And they say, "Hello, Mia Festo."
Hello, I'm Sir Fitzroy Maplecourt, Knight and Absentia to the Realm of Good Castle, and I have just...
Mia Festo!
Hello, Festo. Is that really your... Is that really how you speak, or are you sort
this
of...
This how Festo speak!
Okay. So I just electrocuted my roommates, and now I think I'm in detention. It's funny?
Did they die?
No, I mean, one of them came close, apparently, but no, they didn't. They did not die.
Then it's funny.
Okay. I have to sleep in the same room as them for, I'm guessing, 5 years, so I apologize if I don't find the humor in the situation. Also, did electrocute my teachers, and that's obviously not
that's
great.
That's not funny. That's against school policy.
I figured as much. I assume I'll be receiving some sort of slap on the wrist for that. But anyway, is this detention? Am I going to be writing lines or...
No, we're going to work on your magic.
Okay, the good news for you is that I can only do one of those big electricity blasts a day. So you're cool as the, until, you know, sun up tomorrow.
I'd like to see you try to cast a spell on Festo.
As I said, I don't have any more juice in the tank, so I won't be casting that particular spell. Oh, I pressed to digitate.
Ooh.
Would you like me to produce an odd odor?
Not yet. Not yet. Tell Festo about your magic.
It is... Festo, have you ever had a dream?
Festo dreams?
No, I'm sorry. Like a, like an ambition?
No.
I like Festo.
That's sad. That makes me sad, Festo. You've never had
the
something that you've...
The fairy folk live in the moment.
Okay. But you've never had something that you've wanted your entire life, like...
I want to party.
Festo, are you a teacher's assistant here, or are you the
I'm
actual...
I'm a full-fledged teacher with tenure.
Wow. Okay, congratulations. Anyway...
Thank you.
That where I was going with that is I wanted to be a knight my entire life, so I do not know if you know this. I was enrolled at Clyde Knight's Knight School and was in my final semester training personally under Sylvia Knight, the headmaster there, and I did catfish her, by which I mean I turned her into a catfish with a magical blast that I did not know that I had inside of me. And so I was removed from the academy and now I'm here. So that's kind of where I'm getting in touch with my magic, you know, really looking inside.
And that was your first magic?
That was my first magic, yes. What an unpleasant way for it to blossom.
Ah, how do you feel when you use your magic?
There is a certain loss of control that is, the pits, and so mostly shameful.
Ah, so you do not love your magic.
Oh, no, if you had some sort of, like, orb that I could touch, and then it would eat up my magic, like, if you had some sort of cube that would drain my energies, do you have such a cube?
No.
Yeah, I figured that would be too easy. Anyway, once I get this under control, I will be leaving the school.
Oh, show Festo a spell.
I can produce an odd odor.
No, make light.
Oh, I don't. I can't.
Close your eyes. Make light.
I'm saying I literally can't. Okay. And I close my eyes. And I don't know a light spell, so I don't know if anything.
What
happens
all can prestidigitation do?
Well, I can create a shower of sparks. Sure. Yeah, okay. I close my eyes, and I create an instantaneous harmless sensory effect, such as a shower of sparks.
Oh, no.
What's wrong?
Your magic is sad.
That was a perfectly serviceable shower of sparks,
no, no,
I thought.
No. Your magic knows you do not love it.
That's... Say that again?
Your magic knows you do not love it.
I do not know if I have it in me to court my magic.
I see. Festo sees the problem. You think of your magic as a curse.
Accurately.
You must learn to see your magic not as something to fight, but something to work with.
Festo, that is very, that would be very helpful if you knew what, it was capable of.
I think you do not know what it is capable of.
Festo, I get you're trying to be sort of, like, wise and twist it around on me. I am saying, Festo, you don't know what's going on in there.
Okay, I'm not trying to be wise. Festo is speaking literally.
I am also speaking literally, Festo. There's some stuff going on in there that you do not want to goof around with.
Let me see your hand.
I show them my hand, and it's very clammy.
And they take their tiny fingertip and press it hard against your palm, and your palm glows for just a second.
Does it hurt?
It's warm. And Festo says,
"Now, I want you to cast." Don't think. Cast.
Okay.
And when you cast, floating in front of you is a glowing magical familiar. And Festo has just imparted to you the spell Find Familiar.
Thanks, Festo.
Now, I want you to care for your magic. I want you to work with your magic. You must respect it and teach it to respect you.
Festo, have you just given me a sort of virtual pet? Is that what you're saying? Is
this a familiar.
Right. Is it like
but
an egg that I have
to... not too familiar. Ha! Festo, my joke!
I'm saying, is this like a big bag of flour that I'm going to have to carry around with me at all times?
Yes. But also, does magic.
So, with Find Familiar... you gain the service of a familiar, a spirit that takes an animal form you choose, bat, cat, crab, frog, hawk, lizard, octopus, owl, poisonous snake, fish, rat, raven, seahorse, spider, or weasel. They appear in an unoccupied space within range, and they have the statistics of the chosen form, though it is celestial. It can be a celestial fae or fiend instead of a beast. And they act independently of you, but always obeys your command. In combat, it rolls its own initiative and acts on its own turn. A familiar can't attack, but it can take other actions as normal. When it drops to 0 hit points, it disappears, and you can cast the spell again later to make it reappear.
Okay. Well, you know it ain't a cat.
So what form has it taken?
That's a good question. I wasn't expecting this. What would be... fun to play with for an entire...
You can have it take different shapes.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's a crab.
Right now it's a crab? Great.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so my magic's a crab, and I have to love it very dearly. Come here, sweet boy.
Pinch,
come
pinch,
here,
pinch.
That was Festo saying that.
Pinch, okay. Pinch, pinch.
I will give him a kiss. I love my sweet crab.
No, you are faking it.
No, he's my best friend.
That is performative.
I will tell him all my secrets.
You do not feel the love in your heart. You are performing for Festo.
I'll give him a big hug.
You are a liar.
I'm sorry, Festo. I didn't mean to get heated there. I will take good care of this celestial crab. And
Thank you,
if you would not mind looking around for some sort of magic-eating orb.
Festo has to get to a party now.
Okay, Festo. Can I come?
Bye!
And turns back into the ball of light and zooms out the window.
I set my crab down. Just walk away.
The crab follows you as you walk out of the room.
Crab, just stay. I don't know how to dismiss you because I just learned the spell, but are you really, do you need me to take care of you? Do you need food?
And the crab starts like taking its claws and putting it to its mouth.
Oh, Jesus, God. Okay, let's go to the commissary or whatever.
You head down to the tavern to meet everyone else. Once you reach there, you find everything is in full swing. They are all hanging out at the table. And Zaina has a shift working at the bar and is giving you guys a nice discount. Everybody, let's say, is a little miffed because, you know, you hit them with Thunderwave.
But listen, it's cool now because my magic is this crab. And as long as I love it, nobody has to get hurt.
Everyone pauses for a second and then goes back to the conversations they were having. You notice everyone's drinks are empty and they elect that it is Argo's turn to go up and get another round. So, Argo, it's your turn to head up to the bar.
Argo has... And how many people are there?
There's about, at this point, let's see, 12?
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Okay.
You have the line of credit through the school. You can worry about paying it all off later.
Yeah, yeah.
You're basically got a meal plan. It's fake money. You don't need to worry about it.
Okay. But still, Argo walks up to the bar and says,
hello, barkeep? Hello?
You know my name, Argo.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Hello, Zaina. Listen, do you have like a house beverage, is kind of on the cheap. I know this is on, you know, my card, but paying it off might be a bit of a pain. Do you have something, you know, cheap yet filling?
I will see what we have in the back.
And she heads in the back. And you hear to your right,
Argonaut-keen?
I'm Argonaut Keen, yes.
And as you turn, you see Kinku standing there, who you would have sworn, you would have bet 100 gold, was not there a second before. And you realize that this must be the sneakery teacher, Jackal.
Hello, yeah, that's me, Argo Keen.
Argonaut.
Argo M. Keen, yes. What are we laughing at?
I know about you, Argonaut Keen.
Well, what? That's good. What exactly do you think you know?
You are not exactly what you seem.
Look, who the hell are you?
My name is Jackal, and I listen. I pay attention.
So, can we have this conversation in private sometime instead of in front of all my friends here?
Yes. We will talk. We will discuss many things. Perhaps we will discuss Mariah?
All right. Look, I want to continue this conversation, but just not here, not now. You tell me when and where, and I'll meet you somewhere, okay?
I will meet you. Sorry, Argo, I was not able to find anything.
Ah. Oh, okay, then I guess whatever everybody's having, go ahead and... Oh, I know, put it on my friend's tab here next to me.
He's gone. And in his place, you see sitting on the counter, a napkin... with two rings, as though there was a glass dripping with condensation sitting on them, that someone moved from one position to the next to create the image of two overlapping rings. And written at the bottom of it, in a scrawling handwriting, it simply says, rain and stone.
He grabs it with his rogue's dexterity and shoves it in his pocket before anybody can see it.
You return to the table, back to the laughing squad, enjoying their drinks at the end of another day.
I'm thinking about Snippy. Snippy or Clippy or Gurgles. He makes a gurgle noise.
And you return to find the crab sitting on the table eating some pretzels.
He likes pretzels.
When have I made a gurgle noise?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I would not choose your name or help you select your name with such a carefree. Do you like Snippy?
This is of no concern to me.
Okay. Well, I was thinking the crab would be Snippy. You could be Clippy if you want, and then that could be a fun. We could have fun with that.
And we also have a Dippy and a Tippy too, right?
Oh, dang! I think you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe I would be Ippy.
That's good.
This is nothing.
No, it's just fun.
This is nothing.
We're having fun.
This is not fun.
And slowly, the conversation of new friends fades into the background din of a crowded tavern. Conversations about future plans, excitement about possibilities, worry about upcoming tests. All of it blends into one hum of crowded humanity. And it fades out, and we're left with silence.